Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Today on Sticks In, it's that time of year. PLL free agency has opened, so we talk a bit about that and get you ready for the next couple weeks leading up to the college draft when free agency closes for a little bit. We could talk who could move, some deals that are already done, some things that look like they're in place, all that good stuff. And then, of course, it is Tuesday, so we are going to look at the latest D1 men's college poll from Inside Lacrosse. We'll talk through that and what my ballot looked like, how I was different, and other teams that should be on the radar. If you're liking the podcast, please do leave a like, subscribe, download, whatever, resubscribe, everything you can possibly do to support it. I appreciate that as always. Thank you for coming back. Let's do it. Welcome back to Sticks In, everyone. My name is Dan Arestia. I'm happy you're here. For the second straight week, there's a new number one in the college lacrosse world. And now it's not even an ACC or a Big Ten team. That's growth, right, folks? How can you accuse us all of being biased? I caught random strays this week. I think for having a Notre Dame bias or an ACC, some kind of bias. I don't know. Who among us does not have an ACC bias, right? Anyway, before we get into the college stuff, let's not get ahead of myself here. But before we get to that, PLL free agency has opened. On Monday at noon. There wasn't a flurry kind of right away, which I know people might be used to from other sports and stuff, but it definitely got exciting as the day went on. I wrote a big primer on this for Lacrosse Culture Daily, which if you aren't following them, you're already behind. The content they're putting out is great. They cover college, pro indoor, pro outdoor, a lot of great data-driven work. I see John Donvo really leading the charge for them. It's a very cool outlet. I was very excited that they asked me to write this for them. So Lacrosse Culture Daily, you should check that out. My free agency primer for the PLL is there. To free agency itself, as we said, it officially opened on Monday at noon Eastern time. And we've already got deals. Hecock to the Whips. Colin Hecock to the Whips. Done. Jules Henningberg and Sergio Perkovic, both done deals to the Chaos. Tim Trautner on his way to the New York Atlas. Those are kind of the first four that got done in the afternoon today. Let's kind of look at those each a little bit. First, you know, Colin Hecock to the Whipsnakes. This one kind of felt like it was always just destined to be because, you know, he's a Maryland guy, played with Rambo at Maryland. You know, they talk about being best friends and everything. So we get the Terp reunion there. I mean, he also shared a Maryland roster with Earhart, with Shannon Chuck, with Burnlore, with Matt Dunn, basically you name a Maryland guy on the Whips, and Hecock was probably at Maryland the same time as they were. So you kind of get the immediate locker room culture fit there because that's just kind of how they're built. So you don't have any kind of concerns there. And at the end of the day, Hecock, look, he's a 6'3", 220-pound load of a midfielder. Last offseason, Coach Stagnetta was very clear about one of their missions being we need to find guys who can take the dodging pressure off of Matt Rambo, Zed Williams, Brad Smith, off of those guys, more threats, right? So they drafted Dordovic, who did that. But because of injuries and the way last year went, they still never really felt like they were whole and they had that. So I think Hecock helps them there because he'll win against a shorty. And, you know, I think this makes the Brad Smith injury timetable very important. You're hoping he's back at some point during the season where he can have an impact. But either way, look, a Colin Hecock, Tucker Dordovic, Mike Channon, Chuck midfield line is pretty rough to handle. You know, unless teams decide to start short sticking Will Manny or something like that, or they try and find a way to not pull the midfield beyond Dordovic, then Heacock will hopefully be a guy who can punish them. I imagine that's the plan. So I like that signing for the Whips to add another piece there. It doesn't do a ton for them and by way of getting younger, which I know some Whip fans are clamoring that the team needs to get younger, but I still think he's a good piece to have. It's a good complimentary piece to have. You have some young guys already on that roster to build around with Dordovic, with Brendan Krebs and Net. You have kind of your future, you know, getting built there. So good signing, I think, for the Whips. Jules Henningberg to the Chaos. Jules is a two-handed player. I still consider him to be an elite Dodger. He can still shake just about any shorty, and that's always going to be valuable in the PLL. If you can unsettle the defense, if you can draw slides on game day, there's a spot for you consistently. I didn't always love the way Jules was used on the Woods. When I watch him, what I see is a player who needs space, needs room, does not need a pick on the ball, does not need some two-man slip game thing. He needs some room out on a wing if you want to use him at attack at X, some room to operate where he can separate from his man and draw a slide. That's what he's great at, is he can draw a slide and he can diagnose where the ball needs to go so that when the next guy attacks against an unsettled defense, it's going to create an opportunity. And if you don't slide to him, he can get his own shot. So that's how I see Jules being used. I'm hoping that the Chaos can find scheme for him to do that. I know you think Chaos and you think box lacrosse and nothing but two-man games, but look, they have scheme where they leave Minicus on an island at X and he cooks his man and draws slides and goes. That, you know, they have schemes where even Josh Byrne just gets left on an island on his wing to just go to work on his man. It's not something where the Chaos don't already have this in the playbook. Jules is just another guy who can do what those two guys are already doing for them. So I think it's, you know, again, as much as you think of box lacrosse and two-man games with the Chaos just because of the way their roster is constructed, they have scheme and they have the ability to say, we're going to put this guy on an island with a matchup we like, and we're going to see if your defense is ready to handle it. So I want to see Jules kind of be another guy who can do that for them. Sergio Perkovic is going with Jules from the Redwoods to the Chaos. With Perk, the question is obviously, can he find it again? Can he get back to the Perk we all know and love? You know, last summer, we don't need to, you know, kick a guy when he's down or anything. But look, he did not have a good summer. He was a healthy scratch for a number of weeks. He was on reserve rosters for a while and then into the playoffs. But he just really struggled, couldn't find the net. So I think he had a couple of bright moments in the championship series playing sixes. You know, he was able to kind of let some shots go that you could see him kind of feeling confident about. It took a couple of games to get there. I think it was like game three. He had a game where he really broke out and really produced and was good scoring, and it looked like old Perkovic. And so you kind of see that, and you're hoping you can get that out of him for another couple of years, for a year, you know, at least for the Chaos. It's a one-year deal for them. So I think a Perkovic thing that's interesting here is not necessarily specific to him, but the Chaos are adding a number here of, looks like, of the not box lacrosse type guys. And that's a pivot for them. It's an offense that's going to be a little more interesting to watch, right? You always think of them as playing box lacrosse outdoors, but look, if they have a lineup on the field of Jules and Perkovic and Minicus, you know, and we'll talk about some other guys in a second, but there's some other, you know, non-box players, it's not going to maybe look like the Chaos you were used to. And look, I've always been a fan of the way Towers has been aggressive with his lineups in terms of looking for ways to be at the edge or the cutting edge of what teams are doing in the PLL. You know, in year one, he was that guy who figured out the field is shorter, the two-point line is shorter than it used to be in the MLL. And if we go D-O with all of our poles with all these guys instead of subbing, because everyone else is still trying to sub like it's MLL days, then we can rip a ton of twos and see how that works for us. And we all remember how well it worked for them year one. They were just bombing twos like crazy, just letting Newman step into them over and over again. So, the Chaos kind of pioneered that. And then year two, everybody was grabbing two-way midfielders that didn't need to sub and all that. So, you know, it's kind of the way Towers continues to. And then he leans even harder into the box game when it works for them in the bubble, as the kind of the bubble wore on, but not to get too far off on a Chaos tangent here, but I think Towers is always willing to look for something new to do with his roster and use what he has to throw something at somebody they're not prepared for, that they haven't seen yet. And it feels like the Chaos are ramping up to try and do a little bit more of that. Other signing we had today, Chris Rosie from Rosenthal from Inside Lacrosse broke it. Tim Trautner, goalie from the Redwoods, is signing with the New York Atlas. So the Atlas already signed Drake Porter to keep him from free agency. But Jack Concannon is a free agent. And so signing Trautner gives the Atlas two goalies, and it makes you wonder what Concannon's future is there. Is there one there? Are they moving on from him? People have already been talking all season. Yeah, they're going to draft Liam Eneman too, because they, you know, look, they need some goalie help. Both their goalies were sub 50% save percentage last year. It's the kind of season where even if you chalk it up to just guys not having a good year, it would be negligent to do nothing about it. So Trautner's doing something about it. Maybe they spend a draft pick on Eneman too. And then you want to see kind of who wins that job. I think it's a job that's now there to be won by one of those guys. Trautner, Porter, and then do they draft Eneman? Do you bring back Concannon as a third goalie and go to camp with, you know, basically a bunch of goalies and let somebody win the job? You know, Trautner was rookie of the year in net. You know, I think it's a winnable job for him. So the Atlas are kind of, it looks like, building a goalie competition there and seeing who wants that job the most. Other deals that, you know, aren't officially announced by the league yet, but I've heard or done, or I've reported or done, are Kevin Rogers to the Chaos from the Redwoods, and Jake Richard to the Water Dogs from the Atlas. So Rogers is the third of the of the Chaos just looting the Redwoods. I thought it was a perfect tweet from the Chaos social account that posting the Taylor Swift, "Are we out of the woods yet?" Man, was that ruthless. But I think, you know, you have a full midfield line basically there going from the Redwoods to the Chaos. So, and then Richard's a great ad for the Water Dogs. Again, like, it's what they do. Just quality SSDMs, versatile pieces who can go D to O, who can just do a whole bunch of different jobs for you. It's what they pile out of their roster. So I guess that's a Copeland interim GM move. It might have been something where they agreed to that deal before he stepped down. And, you know, obviously they don't announce the deals until free agency actually opens. But those are two other deals that it sounds like are done. And there's one more. We'll get to the last one in a second that I know we're already we'll spend more on in a minute. But because we're getting to the woods here. The team that I feel like, you know, the biggest list of guys left out there, I think, is still the Woods. Just a ton of expiring deals. And I think we're seeing them now make some decisions about what they want their offense to look like, because we have three players leaving. And look, for plenty of weekends the last year, the last 2 years even, really, there were some weekends where it just didn't click. So now Pinnell is back. Garnsey, it feels like, will almost certainly be back. He's vocally been, you know, said he wants to play for the Redwoods. The word around the championship series was they really want to sign Ricky Miaison back for the summer. That's something to watch, but look, the big move here, obviously, is the last move that was announced tonight, Monday night, if you're listening to this on Tuesday. Tonight is right now on Monday night. The big move here is Garrett Eppel taking a deal, a two-year deal, with the Cannons, the reigning defensive player of the year, the reigning defenseman of the year, I should say, is switching teams. And that's massive. You know, you look at the Cannons, you add Bryce Young, you add Garrett Eppel to the defense. I guess that means Max Wayne, Finn Sullivan, odd men out for them. Those are the two poles they have that are set to be free agents that are unsigned. So, you know, Bryce Young, Garrett Eppel to the mix there. The thing you always talk about with the Cannons now is the locker room fit, the culture fit. The locker room and the culture from a year ago, they clearly got it basically exactly right. That team just vibes together. They just fit together. Adding outsiders to it is always very, very kind of tenuous, kind of difficult. You got to do it very carefully. You don't want to upset the apple cart. You know, I think the Chaos have been really good at this over the years, and that they've kind of kept their group together. They know who fits, they know who doesn't fit, and they make moves quickly. If they have a non-fit or a fit, they lock you up, or they say, it's not going to work here. So, you know, Apple moving to the Canons, you would think, it feels like the kind of organization where players on the team, leaders on the team, wouldn't be surprised by it. Like, it seems like the kind of decision where Coach Holman goes to his guys, goes to, you know, Asher Nolting, to Marcus Holman, to Gettleman, to guys like that, and says, I'm thinking about signing this guy. Does he fit with you? Does he fit in this locker room? And the players would tell him yes, no. It feels like that's the way things would go there. So, you know, I would imagine there's buy-in there from the players on adding Garrett Eppel and it being a good fit. When I look at these Redwood moves in total, you know, just today on the first day, Henningberg, Perkovic, Rogers, Eppel, it sounds like are all out. Three of those guys are confirmed out. The signings were announced. Rogers, I've reported the deal's done, but it hasn't been announced yet. It's clearly reset time for the Redwoods. I think there's a couple of players now you really look at and you want to see what happens with them. Look, they signed Romar Dennis for another year. He's a guy who fits for them, and I think Matt loves him. If they add Ricky too, they've always loved their big midfielders there. So he fits the bill. Ricky fits the bill. And I think Cole Kirst is in line to step into a much larger role for them in the midfield. But it's clearly reset time. I think you look at the next big piece for them is what happens with Eddie Glazner. Is Eddie going to be there for a rebuild, for a reset? Does he sign somewhere else? Does he consider retirement? He has kind of a number of options here. I think what happens with him next is going to be interesting. We'll see kind of what he's up for. But, you know, the vocal leader of that defense is the next piece I'm watching there to see what happens. Otherwise, look, it's clearly time, like I said, to reset things and figure out what kind of team this is going to be. It's been a few years of the same lineup kind of reaching the same result. And if you just keep trotting it out there, then after a while, people are going to call you crazy. So I respect, I think, what they're doing. And I know the discourse has been like, what are the Redwoods doing? They're losing everybody. Are they going to do anything? What's happening? Where are all my favorite players going, if you're a Woods fan? Look, man, sometimes you just need a reset in the locker room. You just need a new group of guys, or you need to change the group of guys, and you need to build a culture with a new group and try it again. It's part of pro sports. What I'll say is this. Don't immediately think that the Redwoods are going to be a bad team or a mediocre team because these guys are all shipping out. When the Atlas needed a culture reset, they shipped out a ton of guys. Everyone thought that team would stink. They didn't at all. The young guys took ownership of that team with a couple of quality veterans who knew how to lead, but also kind of lead from the back, if you will, lead while letting the other younger guys run the show. And I think there's a locker room getting built for that, where this offense gets turned over to Cole Kirst and Charlie Bertrand, and those guys run the show. And the defense starts getting led by Arden Cohen and Owen Grant, and those guys run the show. And you build a culture where those guys are going, and look, you have Rob Pennell there to stabilize things and be your offensive leader. If Glazner is there, you have him to be your leader on the defensive end. If not, you know, I would imagine they try and keep Jack Kelly around or figure out what they're going to do in net. But there's some good balance of young guys who look ready to be stars and veterans who have been stars and can help usher the changeover. You can do that without being a bad team in the PLL. You really can. And I think the Redwoods can. I still think they have a good coaching staff. I still think they have good leadership. And I think it's easy to look at moves on the first day of free agency, see four guys leave town and say, oh, this team's going to suck. They're not going to suck. I'm getting out in front of it today, March 4th. The Redwoods will not be a horrible team in 2024 just because guys are leaving today. So don't get ahead of yourselves there, Redwoods fans. And some of this kind of takes me to another point I try and make about free agency, which is why guys move or what kind of factors go into that. In a lot of pro sports, the first questions you entertain about a player in free agency as a fan or as just a consumer of the product is what team can have this guy come in and play and what team can offer him the most money. Those are things that it's okay to think about in the PLL, but the numbers in terms of the pay aren't big enough yet to outweigh another question. And that question is, does this player have a reason to change teams? Does he want to be on this team? Does he want to be on that team? Because if the money is pretty close to the same everywhere, then sometimes you just don't change teams because it's not worth it. Do you want to join a whole new locker room, a whole new coaching staff for another $1,000 for the summer? Or stay where you are. Be happy with the coaching staff. Leave a few bucks on the table. That works the reverse direction as well. If the money's the same everywhere, do I really want to stay here or do I want to basically make the same and just start things over? Those are the things I think about in the PLL. A midfielder might hit the market and another team might need a midfielder, but if that midfielder is happy exactly where he is, he's going to stay there. There ain't enough money yet to change a mind with that. But there's not enough money to keep a guy in place either. So the money part of it doesn't really become a factor to me. What I really look at is, does this guy really want to be somewhere else? Does he really want to play for somewhere else? That said, look, there's going to be guys on the move. There's teams looking for new players. You've already seen the chaos being super aggressive in the early going. And look, Dane Smith and Ryan Smith hit the holdout list. Chaos have money to spend. They're spending it. They need to fill out the offensive end of the field. They're doing it, and they're going to the top of the market to do it. So I think it was a really fun first day. We'll kind of see what happens over the course of the rest of the week here. As all this is going on, by the way, just like Water Dogs interviews are going on too. There's a couple candidates who are interviews are happening this week. As we said, Copeland's the interim GM. It doesn't seem like there's a ton for this team to do in free agency. You see, they signed Richard, but I don't think there's a ton of other options out there that represent like big time obvious upgrades to what the Dogs already have. So, you know, again, I feel like that job is about hiring someone to manage the existing group, handle the draft, and, you know, who can earn these guys trust quickly or these guys like and can just lead them back to where they're trying to go. If you are big into PLL and big into the free agency stuff, you can keep your eyes on my social. I'll do the best I can to break news of signings and things there. The Stixon tracker is up too at StixonLacrosse.com. You can see the PLL free agency tracker that gets updated when deals are done. I only update the tracker when a deal is officially announced by the league. So even if I report it or if a reputable person reports it, but it's not announced yet, I don't update the tracker till it is. But the tracker is up to date, so you can see who's going where and who's still out there. I do this to try and avoid being very loud wrong, but look, at least once a year I am. Other people you should be following if you're into this stuff, Kevin Brown and Chris Rosenthal from IL are great at the PLL breaking news stuff. And Hutton Jackson, the Pro Lacrosse Talk guys, also do a really good job of getting deals out there and breaking the news of this stuff too. So if you're trying to really be on top of this, those guys are going to get more than I do. So I would make sure you're following them on social as well. All right, with that excitement out of the way, let's go to something much more mellow that everybody just agrees on all the time, that's really fan-friendly, the Inside Lacrosse D1 Men's Lacrosse Media Poll. It was quite the weekend of lacrosse. So many great games. And not to go on a rant about it, because you've already heard it all and everybody else has too, but it sucks that these games are all on at the same time. Please, can we figure out a way to do this where they stagger them just a little bit? Sunday especially. Notre Dame, Maryland, Duke, Princeton, and UNC Penn all on at the same time. Just get out of here. Like, give me one of those games staggered, please. I can't do the I have 10 screens up watching all these games. I'm not actually watching all of them if I do that. I can watch maybe two at a time, maybe. And then I got to go back later and I watch the other ones, you know, on demand on ESPN Plus or whatever. But like, oh, God, so much good lacrosse. It's so hard to see all of it. Anyway, the poll this week, a lot of teams had a claim to the number one spot. I kind of got to where I was thinking about who my number one was a week ago, and that basically informed my whole decision on it. So we'll just get into it. At number one, I had the Denver Pioneers. This is also where they came in the IL poll. So I was like the other voters, I picked the Pios at one. I stared at this spot for a while before landing on Denver. They are currently undefeated. They have two great wins in Hopkins and Cornell. What made me get to the Pios at one for me was I had UVA at one a week ago, and Hopkins beat UVA. So in my mind, Hopkins has a legit claim to the top spot, except Hopkins has a loss, and that loss is Denver. Denver's resume is not soft. It's pretty good. Those two wins are spectacular wins, so don't come knocking the Pios. They get the crown for now. They host Yale this week. Yale's defense is going to need to figure it out for that one. Number two, I have the Army Black Knights. So this is a spot ahead of where they are in the IL poll. Army and Hopkins were in the 2-3 spots. Final poll has Hop 2, Army 3. I have Army 2, and spoiler, Hop 3. They were not that far apart. They were like 6 points apart in the poll. So sounds like a lot of people kind of went this way. But I had Army 2. They beat Q's in the dome. Great win. They also have a decisive win over Rutgers. I think when you watch the Army team play, you just see a team that's good everywhere, that really is just good everywhere. I think matching up with Army on offense is harder than people give them credit for. I think there's enough Dodgers and scary players out there that somebody who can really hurt you is going to get a short stick. And I think the defense is enough quality individual talent that they don't have to slide a lot. And you can see that in the way they scheme. They are not anxious to be this aggressive, sliding, rotating team. They kind of sit tight and they say, bet you can't beat us. And most teams can't. I think Hop has the best win between these two teams with the UVA win. But I tilt Army's way. Army is undefeated, man. They have not lost. But if you want to flip Hop and Army at 2 and 3, I think that makes sense. I think it's perfectly defensible to have Hop 2. I have Hop at 3. So I'm one away from where the poll had them. UVA win, obviously a big-time win. Hopkins and Army got the same number of number one votes. They both got 4 number one votes. So they're close right now. The win over UVA showed what I really like so much about Hopkins. Angelus Wright is their guy coming into the game. He's been hot to start the season. So who were the big-time players in this one? Matt Collison and Jonathan Peschko, of course. Depth on depth on depth. And it's not like, when you look at the Hopkins depth on offense, it's not like they have a pretty good second midline depth. It's like the UVA depth from recent years where it feels like they just run 7 attackmen all the time. Like everyone's just great. When I watch the Hopkins offense play, my thought is whatever D1 team has a coach opening for a head coach spot in the near future, their first call needs to be John Crawley. I think he schemes this offense incredibly well for the guys he has. I think UVA made it a little bit easy for him by shorting Matt Collison for basically the entire game. And Matt Collison just said thank you and scored 4 goals. So I thought that was a little weird on UVA's part. But look, if you're going to give Crawley a gift, he's going to take it from you. Hopkins Q's in Charlotte this weekend is going to be excellent. I cannot wait for that. At 4, I have UVA. Final poll has them 5. I have them 4. 4, 5, and 6 are basically your ACC trio of powers, your axis of evil from the ACC. And so in some order, however you want to have them. I currently consider UVA to be the best of these three. They each have a loss. I think UVA has the best loss in Hopkins. They've played a tougher schedule than Duke. And I think if you put UVA on the field today against the other two, I would take UVA. The thing that makes it difficult is Gobriel didn't play against Hopkins, and that was a massive factor. Hopkins worked UVA at the faceoff spot, especially in the second half. If Gobriel isn't available for a while, then that's big, and that literally could cost UVA games. They need to be able to compete facing off. So that's kind of the thing to watch for them. Number 5, I have the Duke Blue Devils. They lost to Penn this week and then beat the brakes off Princeton. They came in the final poll at 6. Like I said, ACC kind of power trio here of UVA, Duke, Notre Dame that you're going to have in some order. This is just how I kind of did it. Duke got a number one vote, which surprised me a little bit, given that they lost to Penn on Friday. And I know who made it. And I know you're listening. Shame on you. I'm not sure. Look, if you want to do the Duke is my title pick, so I'm going to vote them one every week, I think you can do that. It's not insane. And I think if you just watch the teams play and you want to say Duke's the best team in the country, then you can say, okay, Duke's number one. Vote that way. Look, and they immediately got right with a lopsided win over Princeton. They played that game pissed. And look, Duke is my title pick, but to me, wins and losses matter on a weekly basis, and the polls need to account for what you do every week. So I think Duke is going to be there on Memorial Day. This week, they went 1-1. They should be dropped a little bit. Number 6, they got Notre Dame. Totally fair to say I have them too low. They just beat Maryland. They have the best win of this trio of UVA, Duke, and Notre Dame. I think they also have the worst loss, the loss to Georgetown. And the loss is maybe still a little fresh. There might be a little recency still tainting my thinking of Notre Dame. If you have Notre Dame at 4 where they came in at the poll, I think that's fine. That's fair. I have them behind the other two, and I think that's fair as well. Unless you're Nick Cosello. He doesn't think that's fair. Number 7, I have the Terps. This match is where they come in the IL poll. They drop a little bit following the loss to the Irish. They played a beast of a schedule, man. They already have wins over Princeton, Syracuse, Richmond. You know, Loyola kind of flirts with the poll. It's just ranked win after ranked win in non-con for them. Their remaining non-con schedule is Brown and UVA. So the Terp schedule is obviously spectacular for them. They have 2 10 goal scorers in Erksa and Maltz. I continue to love their defense. McNaney made some unreal saves against Notre Dame. You can never count out a Tillman team. I won't believe they aren't going to be playing Memorial Day weekend until I arrive for a Final Four game and physically see that they are not present there. Until then, you can't count them out. Number 8, I have Cornell, who beat Ohio State this week. CJ Kearse had 7 goals, winning the duel with Bobby Van Buren, although BVB did not look to be 100%. Cornell has wins over Ohio State. Their only loss is a 1-goal loss to the now number 1 Denver Pioneers. Kearse has obviously been on a heater, but the Big Red Attack, I mean, I don't know how you handle it. It's such a monster. Nobody's holding them down. Nobody. Kearse, Long, and Firth. Oof. The 15 goals against Ohio State was their lowest total through 4 games. That's the fewest goals Cornell has scored in a game. 15 against Ohio State's defense. This matches where Cornell came in the IL poll there at 8. At 9, I have Penn State. I got the Nittany Lions here this week. I jumped them up into the top 10. They beat Yale in overtime after trailing 8-1. They were trailing 7 goals at the half. TJ Malone's second half was off the charts good. They come all the way back. They win an OT. They really carved up the Yale defense on the interior more than anything. Penn State comes in at 11 in the final poll. I think they're better than that. Since the opening loss to Colgate, they've beaten Villanova, Navy, Yale. You know, it's a pretty good lineup of opponents there. They play Cornell on Saturday. TJ Malone's got 25 points. I think that could be a high-scoring one. That could be a first to 20 wins sort of game. I hope it is. I'm going to watch that one. At 10, I have the Q's. The Orange's best win right now is what? Utah? Colgate? High Point? Ugh. The 2 big-time opponents on the Q's schedule, the Terps and Army, are both overtime losses. So to me, they belong right around 10, right around here. The final poll has them at 9, 1 ahead of where I have them. Okay. This weekend is obviously their biggest game. Every weekend now is like their biggest game. They're playing Hop at the Crown in Charlotte. They need to win games like that to build themselves a tournament resume. I hate to break it to you, Q's fans, but like if your wins over the year are teams that are the caliber of Utah, High Point, Colgate, that ain't a tournament team. It ain't. You're going to have to do better than that. You might be trading on name a little bit, but you got to get some of these wins against teams like Hop. So they'll be 3-5, top 3, top 5 with a win against Hopkins probably. top five-ish with a win over Hopkins, you'd think. With a loss, people are going to start wondering, when is Q's going to beat a tough opponent? Are they going to do it before ACC play? How are they going to handle ACC play if they lose to their ranked opponents in non-con? Number 11, I have Georgetown, the Hoyas. They came in at 10 in the poll. Here I have them at 11. Basically, my Penn State was higher than everybody else's, and that kind of threw this all off. The Hoyas avoid the trap. They win against Bruno. Really, this was just kind of a TCB, taking care of business weekend for the Hoyas, and they did. Held Aiden McLean pointless on 0 for 6 shooting, and that was enough to basically just shut down Brown. Brown couldn't score. Hoyas have high point next. That should be another win for them. 12, I have Yale off the Penn State loss. This matches where they came in the IL poll. Giving up that big lead is always a worry when people came in having questions about your defense, and then the Penn State offense does what it did. Yale's missing two-thirds of their starting attack. I know it's not an excuse, and it's not really the story for them. They're still scoring goals. They put up 14, you know. Patrick Bassano has looked good on defense the last few weeks, but defending PSU is a team thing. Protecting the interior is about team defense, and it's not a matchup thing. And the Yale interior was open for business in the second half against Penn State. Yale visits Denver this weekend. They will do the same thing if Yale doesn't clean it up. 13, I have Michigan, the Wolverines. Two good wins for Michigan basically over the last week for different reasons. They beat Jacksonville. Good win because a little bit of adversity in that game. Trailing at halftime, a talented, well-coached team that's going to fight you in Jacksonville, and Michigan gutted out a win there. And then Delaware, it's a five-goal win over a ranked opponent. That's good. This match is where Michigan comes in the final poll. I think they'll probably float around this area of the poll unless they get moved up due to results ahead of them. For this week anyway, the big game, the big opportunity for them is on March 16th when they play Notre Dame. 14, I have the Penn Quakers. This match is where they came in the poll. I was trying to find a way to get Penn higher up because I wanted to reward them appropriately for beating Duke. But then the way UNC beat them the next day, they played like, oof, they did not. They played like they emptied the tank against Duke and just didn't have enough left to put up a good fight against UNC. The whole transitive property of it all kind of becomes difficult when that happens. But I also don't think it's crazy to suggest that Emmett Carroll has been the best goalie in the country so far this year. Certainly in the conversation. He's incredible against Duke. I thought Brendan Lavelle winning his matchup with Brendan O'Neill was probably the key to that game. Face-offs was the other key to that game. But when you have Carroll and Lavelle winning a matchup, and then you have the face-off going your way, that's always how you put it together. I think, you know, they were talking about it on the broadcast. I think Anish was saying, you know, that's the formula. So Penn got all those things against Duke. They won the game. They lost face-offs in a big way against UNC. They lost the game. It just makes such a difference for a group like Penn's right now, that face-off battle. At 15, I have UNC. Maybe high, kind of feels high. I didn't want to have them way down because they lost to Princeton. But and then they followed up with Penn, who just beat Duke. UNC just doesn't look or feel like a bottom of the poll team to me. I don't know. It's hard to parse where to put these squads. I didn't feel like both Penn and Princeton should be above the heels. I don't know. I might have just gotten this wrong. They committed 18 in the final poll. I had UNC kind of floating between here and around 18, around closer to the bottom, but I don't think they're a bottom of the pool team. 16, I have Princeton. Nah, it's probably too low. They came in at 15, one spot ahead of where I have them. I don't know if they're the worst of these three teams from 14 to 16. They just beat up UNC in the rain, so you can't say they're definitely worse than UNC. It's hard to get through, all right, Tigers beat UNC, who beat Penn, who beat Duke, who beat the breaks off Princeton. You know what I mean? You get the circular thing, and then how do you get through it all? I would very easily flip-flop Princeton and UNC here, but you know, this is just kind of where I was feeling when I did this. 17, I have Rutgers, who beat Hofstra this week. They came in at 16, one spot ahead of where I have them. There's not a ton to report here this week. They beat Hofstra, who they should beat, by a five-goal margin, because I think Hofstra is good and battled. The knowns did their thing. Stoller had another great game in net. Every bit of experience he gets is good. Like games like this, where it's like, it's not a blowout. Hofstra's fighting. They're not going to go away. Goalie experience in those games is good. And they get a midweek game with Detroit Mercy, and then they take on Princeton. So good tests next weekend for them. At 18, I have Harvard. Crimson just keep winning. They came into the final poll at 19. I have them 18. Their best win right now, I think, is probably Bryant and maybe Vermont. So, like, nothing too earth-shattering. But, look, 5-0 is 5-0. And they are cooking teams the last two games out. And that says a lot considering how banged up they are. Sam King has been so good. He's at 32 points in five games. Only Brennan, Spallina, and Josh Sawada have more points than him right now. Harvard visits Michigan this week. That's their toughest opponent by far of the season. Harvard has, look, they have two seniors on this team who have scored a goal this year. And one of them is the goalie. It's a young group that's still experienced because they've been on the field a lot since they were underclassmen. And Sam King is the guy kind of steering the ship. So I like this Harvard team. 19, I have Richmond. They came in at 17. I have them at 19. I continue to just have them lower than they actually are. They won and dropped two spots in the final poll, which is funny. But that's what happens when you win against Binghamton and you're ranked kind of on the strength of what your losses are, but then you aren't getting wins against big-time teams. You get leapt over by other teams that have better wins. So they beat down Binghamton. Obviously, that's not going to do a ton for poll voters. UMBC this weekend probably isn't going to do a ton either. The Spiders' next big chance is March 16th against Duke. They have the talent to hang in there and battle with people. I think the A-10 is going to be a good battle. Richmond, I think, is, you know, if you're picking favorites right now, it's Richmond. But it's going to be fun. UMass is feisty. St. Joe's is in there. You can't sleep on St. Joe's. High Point has weapons. And then you have Richmond. You know, it's a good conference. It's going to be, again, I think Richmond's the favorite, but it's going to be a good battle. At number 20, I have Delaware. I kept the Hens in. Final poll dropped them out and gave this spot to UMass. If you put Delaware on the field today against UMass, I'd pick Delaware. But they need to get some big-time wins. They have losses to Penn and Michigan, both really strong teams. Their wins, though, are St. John's and Lafayette. Not going to do a ton. They play Monmouth this week. Depending on other results, with those as their wins, assuming they beat Monmouth, pretty, you know, I don't think that's a crazy assumption. There's a chance they win and drop out next week. Because, look, you play your way into the poll, but you got to play to stay in it, too. And if teams outside the poll play better teams and get better wins, then you're going to slide. So I have Delaware just hanging on at 20. The other teams I considered for this, UMass is the team that got the 20 spot. I did consider them. I thought about them. I have them just outside the poll right now. They're probably in the 21-22 spot for me. They've won four straight, and they played Army to a one-goal loss. It's another one of those good losses that my brain has a hard time with. Their wins are Albany, Marist. Not a ton for you there, I guess. UVM and Rutgers ahead for UMass. So Rutgers, obviously, a big chance for them. UVM is not as bad as their record might say. So I considered Colgate, who beat Loyola this week. I will spend the entire year with no idea what to make of Loyola. The win is a good one because Loyola has good wins and good losses. Colgate currently sits at 3-3. The Penn State win is doing a lot of heavy lifting, and the Patriot League is always brutal. But if Colgate can pick off some Patriot League heavyweights, can they be a tournament team? Do they have to win the Patriot League? Probably, right? Probably, yeah. Villanova, I considered. I need to stop hating on the Cats. It's really immature of me. They beat Lehigh this week. Colgate win gets better all the time for them. Their losses are Yale and Penn State. Two, you know, teams I have in the high teens, top 10-ish area in the poll. So they've still got Penn remaining before they get to Big East play. I think they're probably somewhere 22-23 for me right now. Kind of frisky, kind of looming. Ohio State, I considered. They lost to Cornell, so they drop out to make room for teams coming in. They're in a rough stretch of schedule. They lost to UVA and then to Cornell. And then this week, I believe it's Notre Dame for them. So, I mean, you love that they're playing a schedule this hard, but there's a chance they just go winless through those. Their defense is talented and super athletic. I love, like, everybody down there has great footwork, and they can stay in front of their man really well when they're healthy. I know CJ Kirst kind of took it to him this week, but, like, I just like their athletes on defense. They're just good. So I think a win versus the Irish will launch them up the pole, but that's a tall task. They're going to need to get something out of their offense, and Tommy Burke's going to need to be electric. I considered Quinnipiac when I was doing this. The Bobcats, look, they're 4-0. Wins over Brown, Bryant, Merrimack. Those are as good as anybody else's wins who are kind of also getting considered or is in the poll right now. You know, I have Delaware in. Their wins are St. John's and Lafayette. Is that more impressive than Quinnipiac beating Brown, Bryant, Merrimack? They also beat St. John's? Canisius on deck, who's not a bad team. I mean, they're not like world beaters, but not a horrible. Bobcats could stretch this undefeated streak a couple more weeks. 4-0 should get you at least considered. They've been really good to start the year. NJIT got votes. I didn't vote for NJIT. I know, like, they're, look, if I'm making a case for the Bobcats at 4-0, I guess I should make one for NJIT at 6-0. For the Highlanders, there can be only one. But a win over Wagner doesn't mean you jump over Delaware. Sorry. I will continue to cheer for NJIT every single week. I love the story. I love watching them. I cannot get enough of it. But I also don't think they're better than Delaware. And other teams that got votes, I didn't consider Towson, but Towson got votes. If they had beaten Loyola, I probably would have considered them or put them at 20. They smacked UMBC this weekend, which isn't going to do much to get you into the poll, but I think the Tigers are a good team. They're definitely better than where my expectations were for them this year. I did not think they would be bad, but I also did not have them kind of notching some of their performances and some of the wins that they've had. They've had some really impressive moments. I believe they play in my neck of the woods this year. I believe they're at Fairfield this year, so I am going to try and head out and make sure I see Towson play. But that is the top 20 poll, and that is going to do it for today. Make sure you follow along at sticksandlacrosse.com for PLL Free Agency to see the latest and signings and other things that are happening there. And thank you again for coming back and sticking around with me. See you next time.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.